Welcome to another edition of I've Got a Beatles Podcast, an educational, informative, and irreverent look at all things Beatles. I'm David Thurmeyer, music theory professor, songwriter, and owner of a sitar.
And I'm Chris Bragg, writer, comedic actor, and Paul McCartney apologist.
We will dissect some of the most popular Beatles tracks,
as well as some of the duds,
and keep you up to date with the latest news.
So, what do you say, Dave? Let's get to Beatling.
Sounds good to me. The title of today's show is Defending Ringo. And so the first thing you might ask is, why do we have to defend Ringo? What's there to defend Ringo from? So, Chris, what do you think here?
So much. Ringo's got a lot of criticism over the years. One thing is he clearly has had the least successful solo career of the four Beatles. Perhaps because of some goofy choices. Doing a lot of oldies. His latest album, he re-records some songs that were in previous albums.
That's always a bad idea, it seems.
Yeah. He's often maligned for not a very good solo career.
It's very inconsistent, and when he first started out, actually, it's kind of funny, right? He was one of the most successful Beatles. There was a point where he had several number one hits in a row.
And yeah.
That was off the Ringo album in 1973. But part of the reason why he was really successful, I think, is because he had a lot of help from his friends. And some of those hits were number one hits from George Harrison's help and from doing re-recording oldies and things like that. So I think, wouldn't you say, one of the reasons he's maligned is he's not known as a songwriter particularly, and that's how you become famous, or after the 50s, that's how you became famous. You wrote songs, and
I think that's definitely true, and particularly making it difficult on him is that he was thrown in a, like, if you think of Ringo, obviously you think of the Beatles, and the other three people at the Beatles are three of the greatest songwriters of all time. It's three of the greatest singers of all time.
Yes.
Three of the greatest musicians overall of all time. So it's
a tall
difficult
order
to compare yourself to him, to everybody else, you know.
And when Ringo did try to write songs, what happened? Well, the first song, what was the first song you got credit for? I think it was. Was it What Goes On, maybe, from Rubber
Soul? Goes On, or, yeah, something.
Ugh. Yeah, something like that. But his first real solo song that he wrote was Don't Pass Me By from the White Album, and I think they just kept laughing at him and making fun of him. Like, it took him years, like 5 years or something, to write it. But yeah.
And at some point in that song, he rhymes a word with itself.
That's right.
I think we talked about it White Album episode, if you want to
That's
hear
right.
that commentary.
That's a pretty rare feat to be able to do that.
The other thing, too, about Ringo is he just has this personality of just a real, like, affable, sort of everyman, sort of downtrodden person. And so it makes him easy to be sort of a doormat.
Yeah.
You know? You rarely ever heard him get real ticked off or...
Mm-hmm.
Or in interviews, I saw an interview with him and Tom Snyder.
Oh.
And Tom Snyder is one of the most idiotic question askers of all time. And he would ask Ringo these questions and be like, Ringo, just, you know, fluff it off. Like, oh, well, I mean, he's just too nice sometimes when he's being insulted. So.
Except for that one thing a couple of years ago. You remember when he decided he was going to stop signing autographs? He wrote on his website, "Don't send me any more photos or CDs or anything. I'm not going to sign them." But then he ended it by saying, "Peace and love, Ringo." And, I don't know. He snapped then, but yeah, you're right. He's always kind of the nice guy and. Well, actually, that turns out to be a positive thing in some ways, as we'll talk about by the end of the show. Yeah, so personality, lack of songwriting, he's not the greatest singer in the world.
But there are many reasons to defend him.
Yes.
And we'll give you a few of them here. The first one, the biggest one, the one most obvious, and the one also debated, because he wasn't a flashy or showy drummer, but he was extremely solid, very, very, very talented drummer, and we're going to play some examples to show and highlight a few of the tracks that he drummed best on, both in the Beatles and after the Beatles.
Now let's think before we play, what do you think makes a great drummer? What's a great rock drummer like? What do they have to have?
First of all, and this is the thing he was best in at, I think, drumming-wise, is steadiness. Mm. Like, keep a steady tempo, or, you know, don't rush, don't, you know, don't be too lazy with it.
Like,
you know?
That was when we played, remember listening to our podcast a couple times ago, when we talked about Pete Best. Remember, we played a version of Love Me Do with Pete Best on drums, and you could hear him dragging the tempo. And he was just behind, and the whole thing just dragged. So, that's right. I mean, Ringo had excellent time. You could set a watch by his beat. It was just perfectly on.
Another thing, too, is his... You know, the Beatles ended up being such a recording-type group, you know, like, after a while. When they were a performing group, he was excellent. Like, he was the only thing holding it together, basically, when they were a performing group. When they switched to a recording group, he still had, I mean, you know, all of the Beatles' sound is innovative. And well, guess what? His drum sounds are a lot of the ways to record the drums were stuff that they created. So, I feel like he's... The thing was, the Beatles were never a band like, say, Led Zeppelin, where you get a big, long drum break, you know, or have a whole 20-minute song of the guy just playing drums, if you love that song or not. We can talk about that on our other podcast. I got a Zeppelin podcast,
Well, that's a... I don't think I'd listen to that one. But,
yeah.
You know, that's a good point, though. I don't know about you, but when I go to concerts, if I hear a drum solo for very long, I'm sort of, again, like, well, I really need to go to the bathroom. Maybe this is a good time for that. Or, I'm thirsty. Maybe a beer would be good right now. You know, I'm not that impressed. And you look at Ringo's, how many drum solos did Ringo take in the whole Beatles? We know one.
What?
Yeah, on the last album, Abbey Road. And we're going to talk about that one. But that's the only drum solo. So I think sometimes you can lead, you can be a good drummer, and you can lead by being subtle and by being a team player more than anything else and not drawing attention to yourself. That's like George Harrison's not Jimi Hendrix, but he's still a great guitar player because he's subtle and flashy when he needs to be, and tasteful. And that, I think taste is something that makes the Beatles so tasty.
Well, and here's a couple great drummers. John Bonham and Keith Moon.
Mm-hmm.
Both of them partied too much and, you know, ended up dying because they just couldn't keep it together.
didn't Keith Moon drive into
both of those bands? Really, I mean, I mean, the Who have kept playing, but they're not the Who of, you know, yesteryear. Zeppelin smartly said, "Oh, maybe we should stop at this point."
Didn't Keith Moon drive into a swimming pool drunk?
Yes.
Hotel? Yeah, I thought so. Oh. What a mess!
Yeah. Disasters as people.
Yeah.
Ringo, nice. So you're like, oh, he's not a real rock drummer. You know,
right.
It's like, oh, come on.
Yeah.
So, anyway, you know what? We got examples of very, very good tracks that he played on. in Ed Sullivan's studio and just pounding away. And so let's hear a little bit of It Won't Be Long.
It won't be long, yeah.
That song, that's one that you don't listen to too often unless you pull out with the Beatles, but in that song it's the vocals and the drums to me really make it drive. And that's, you know, Ringo's the ride cymbal is going, and I don't know,
yeah, there's so much going on too. And then in two sections of that song they go to a completely different feel.
Yeah,
I'm so alone, now you go, you know, and he seamlessly sort of almost is directing that song,
yeah.
I think, behind the drums.
He was good at going back and forth between the hi-hat and the ride cymbal. If you listen to I Want to Hold Your Hand in the middle section, he does the bridge, he does that also as well. It's, you'll hear the cymbal for a lot of it, and then all of a sudden he goes to the hi-hat and it becomes quieter. So, yeah, it's orchestrated in a way. Good song. Another early song that was a big hit, big single, was I Feel Fine. And what do you think of this one? This has, again, this is that early driving sound, but a little bit different.
Yeah, let's hear just a clip of it here.
Good to me, you know she's happy as can be, you know she said so. I'm in love with her and I feel fine. Baby says she's mine, you know she tells me all the time, you know she said so. I'm in love with her and I feel fine. I'm so glad that she's my little girl. So glad she's telling all the world that her baby buys her things, you know. He buys her diamond rings, you know. She's...
Yeah, it's another example of him seamlessly changing feels throughout it. And I'm just struck on that one, like how on that you think, oh, Ringo, yeah, real basic drummer, just does the basic thing. And on that one, he's got so much going on, sort of almost a bossa nova kind of thing happening underneath. And it's like, oh, I didn't even notice that, because you're not thinking about the drums. It's not standing out, but it's what makes the sound of that song like so complete.
Yeah. Yeah, it's got like a Latin thing going on there. And yeah, it makes you swing and dance a little bit, I know.
Oh, if they can only see us. This is only a visual podcast.
I know. So we're dancing right now.
Shimmying from both of us there.
But that is a great song. It's kind of like the other two, that he changes the feel. Yeah, but it's so subtle that you have to listen for it, because you're focusing on the tune or the lyrics or the vocals or something else, that Ringo's just in the back enough. But, you know, if you didn't have it there, different tune, different sound. So... those are two really good early examples of some of the innovative things that Ringo did.
Another example here, I know Dave's going to be disappointed here, because I'm going to make him play this track that he despises. but no, this is Dave's favorite song, isn't it? Is this your favorite Beatles song?
Yes.
Is it your favorite Beatles song or is it your favorite song?
No, it's my favorite Beatles song for sure. People say, how can you pick just one? And it is hard. But this is, it always has been. I don't know. Again, maybe sometime we'll talk about our favorite. We should have a talk about why we like the favorite songs we do. But this one just has everything. It's a complete package to me. And I wanted to play you an interesting version of it. It's the original version before it was slowed down. This is a psychedelic tune called Rain, and it was the B-side of the single for Paperback Writer. And it's a very trippy type song. John Lennon went home and was having some marijuana and put the tapes on backwards, and there's some backwards stuff. Very innovative recording. But I'm going to play a different version of it where it's actually a half step up. So it's a little bit faster and sounds a bit different. But Ringo himself has said this is his best drumming. So we'll let you be the judge here and take a listen to the song Rain from 1966.
The precision on that track.
All parts. So we played you the first version that was the higher version with no words, just so you could hear the drums, and then we played you the finished version with everything on it and John Lennon singing, and it's really precise, right in time. The bass part is amazing. Well, hey, I like the song a lot. What can I say?
Those fills are just like...
right on. So, great middle period example of Ringo's drumming. And I think even if you're not listening for it, I think you can't help but notice his drumming on that one.
Yeah. I saw a special, I think it was on HBO, and it was Ringo being interviewed... for some reason, by Dave Stewart of the Eurythmics. I don't know why. But real good interview. And one of the things he pointed out in that interview was his drumming in Come Together, which, of course, we could all just kind of, you know, imagine the fill there at the beginning. We'll play it. Now, notice in the fill... if it sounds weird or sounds strange or anything, you think, oh, maybe they recorded the fill and then they put it backwards or something. But no, he was playing a fill there in the reverse way. They normal drummers would play it sort of right to left. Even left-handed drummers would play it right to left because that's the way the drums are set up. But to come back the other way in that way and play it exactly how he plays it, apparently, he claimed in this interview, like I've never met hardly anybody who can play it, you know, blah, blah, blah. Mm. So he's like, it's a bloody great film. So let's hear a little bit of that.
So here's Come Together from Abbey Road, played by left-handed drummer Ringo Starr. So is that a pretty bloody good fill?
Yeah. Also, I like that. Yeah. That before they, when they stop with the singing, it's just him. It's like
the bass drum. Yeah.
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 It's great. It's a great fill. Of course, also around that time, Get Back, and that's a really good performance on that one, particularly the rooftop one. We were talking about the rooftop concert. We'll get another example of sparse drumming here in a bit, but before that, we want to play the only sort of drum solo you ever had with the Beatles.
Which is on Abbey Road also. It kind of bookends here. Last song, well, Her Majesty's the last song, but this is the real last song on
the album. Last song that counts.
Last song that counts, yes. Anyway. And so it's called The End. It's at the end of a long medley of tunes. And here's Ringo's only recorded drum solo with the Beatles. We're having too much fun with this Ringo episode here. I didn't think we were going to have this much fun.
I thought the Ringo episode would be dreadful, but it turns out it's pretty good. That's such a great solo and a great that drum solo really setting up the ending is what is key on that track. You know?
Yeah, it is. Is it the greatest drum solo ever? Technically, no, but it works. You know, it fits in, and as you said, it sets up what comes next really well. And there, all those fills that he plays in there are like classic Ringo fills too that you hear in a lot of songs. So it kind of puts everything together.
I wanted to mention too. So after the Beatles, you know, obviously he played on his own records a lot. but he guested on a whole bunch of stuff. A Bob Dylan album, Shot of Love, not one of Bob Dylan's greatest.
No, pretty weak.
pretty weak. played on, you know, certain, like, several Peter Frampton albums for some reason.
Did not know that.
But a couple of the, and Jeff Lynne's solo album. I'm sure everybody's got that one.
Well, so, I know you do. You're Jeff Lynne's biggest fan.
But a couple of the most famous albums he played on, one was All Things Must Pass. The other one was Plastic Ono Band. And I wanted to mention Plastic Ono Band because there's a great documentary. It's one of the classic albums series.
Are we talking John Lennon Plastic Ono Band or Yoko Ono Plastic Ono Band? Because he plays on both.
I'm talking more about the John Lennon Plastic Ono Band.
Okay. Just wanted to make sure.
The one people have listened to. Yeah. Anyway, there's a great documentary, fantastic music documentary series. I believe they were filmed in the BBC, called Classic Albums, and they do they concentrate on one album and specifically on the recording aspects of it, and they will have their board there, and they'll pot up just like isolated parts of it. And watching that documentary about Plastic Ono Band gave me a whole new appreciation of Ringo. And they were talking specifically about how on that album they were going for a very sparse, very minimalist, quiet at times sound, very muted kind of drums. And so he was playing drums in sort of a way that he didn't even usually play them, and getting sounds out of it the way he doesn't usually do it. A great track to listen to for that is Isolation. But we wanted to play one that is it's a little bit busier. It's on that album, but it really like highlights his abilities, I think. And yeah, that's the track I Found Out. So let's hear a little bit of that. Then we'll hear Dave's comments on it.
I told you before, stay away from my door. Don't give me that brother, 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 brother. The freaks on the phone won't leave me alone. So don't give me that brother, 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 brother.
That was I Found Out from John Lennon Plastic Ono Band, and I was looking at a quote from an interview that John Lennon gave in Rolling Stone magazine right after the Beatles split up, when he was real bitter, pretty grumpy. But Jan Wenner, who's still the editor of Rolling Stone, asked him about this album, and he asked particularly why he used people he knew, because Klaus Voormann plays on it and Billy Preston, and he says, Why do you get along with Ringo? And he says, and Lennon says, because in spite of all things, the Beatles really could play music together when they weren't uptight. And if I get a thing going, Ringo knows where to go, just like that, and he does well. We've played together so long that it fits. That's the only thing I sometimes miss, and this is missing about being the Beatles, is being able to sort of blink or make a certain noise, and I know they'll all know where we're going on an ad lib thing. You know, he and Ringo just mixed well together, and it is very minimalistic sounding on there, but it fits the lyrics and fits the song and that whole atmosphere. And as you were, we were talking about while we were listening, just the mix of it all and the sound of the drums in that mix.
Yeah, I was even then we had talked about it, and then we played it, and I was like, wow, he's really. I like it's almost like the drums is number one in the mix.
Yeah,
know? Like
real
really
high. Yeah,
stands out there. I think that too is a great example. Like sometimes albums, I mean, we're getting off on a little bit of a tangent. We'll I'm sure at some point do a review of that album. But
yeah, you have to.
Sometimes albums, the mix of albums, when it actually matches the intent of the album too, that was supposed to be a stark, sparse, like raw emotion kind of record, and it was, and they recorded it that way.
Yeah,
they recorded it in a way that it would benefit that. So it's really good. So Ringo, you know, and he played on some. One other thing is, I would very highly recommend, you can get it on Netflix streaming, that documentary, Plastic Ono Band documentary, to take a look at. Ringo played on, yeah, a bunch of other stuff. You know, he also had a solo career.
He did.
And some of his drumming on that is good, too. So drumming, Ringo as a drummer, fantastic. I think that's the biggest way to defend Ringo, if you ask me.
It speaks for itself, I think, his playing. So not only is Ringo a great drummer, but he did sing some...
Well, this is very carefully worded.
He did sing some good, simple type songs very well. And they're some of the most famous Beatles songs, actually. And you have to start with the first one. He sang a bunch of other songs before this song, but they were mainly oldies and rock and roll covers and things. But this is the one that most people know, I'd say, and it was off Revolver and Yellow Submarine.
That's right, Yellow Submarine, great track, classic track, and Ringo's singing style's very... I think if you take Beatles tracks and you're going to play them to kids... And you want kids to sing along with them, like, probably all the Ringo songs go in the mix, you know?
Yeah.
Because he is a very simple singer. He doesn't have a big range. I think as a singer, he's kind of like an actor is as a singer sometimes, where it's like, act the part of the singer. Like, don't worry about if you're a singer or not. Just act the part of
it. Yeah.
And I think he acted the part of, like, real nice, simple guy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so.
And good, yeah. And that one's good for kids. As is his other song that he wrote in 1969, Octopus's Garden, which I think those two sort of go together. Maybe it's the marine theme going here of water and different sea creatures, but... Yellow Submarine and Octopus's Garden. And then in the middle, another famous Ringo singing performance, even though he didn't write it, was With a Little Help from My Friends off Sgt. Pepper.
That one definitely is a standout thing if you think of... That's the one you almost don't think, oh, Ringo sang that one.
Right.
Which I think says a lot about it. It's like, oh, it's a Beatles song. Yeah. Oh, yeah, With a Little Help from My Friends, that Beatles song. Not, oh, Ringo sang on that one.
Skip.
You know? So, yeah, that's a great one. And then one other one we didn't is Good Night.
Oh, yeah.
Which he actually sings very well on. I think that's probably the one where he sings the highest and the most beautifully.
It is. It's very sweet.
All of his Beatles tracks. But good tracks all. We'll not play any clips from them. But we will play a clip from one of his one of the songs in his early solo career. He sang several songs, which I thought were pretty good. Photographs, one of my favorites. But let's play one that he also had a hand in writing the song.
Yeah, this is It Don't Come Easy, and it was produced by George Harrison.
You know.
That was It Don't Come Easy by Ringo Starr.
Standing out in that again was the drums. The drums sound good in it. And, yeah, he sings it pretty well, you know. I mean, we're not going to have 100 examples of great virtuoso vocal performances from Ringo. And that's part of why he's maligned a lot. Maybe that's part of why his career hasn't been as fantastic as could be.
Yeah.
But that brings me actually to... I think Ringo understands his limitations, but also understands that he is a big draw just by being a Beatle. And he sort of figured out how to have a long career in the last 20 years of going out and creating these all-star bands and doing these tours with the all-star bands and have like, you know, Peter Frampton and all these other people. Yeah. Like every one has different set of these old, like, you know, like John Entwistle and people like that who, you know, otherwise at the time wouldn't have been doing anything, getting them together to do a tour where Ringo's able to sing his hit songs. We hear some hit songs from some of the other people, you know, and we get the Ringo, we get enough Ringo for our Phil.
Yeah.
And he's had, you know, he's helped, I'm sure all of these people have benefited from those tours.
That's a really good point. He is a draw just by the fact that you see his name up there. Everybody knows who Ringo is, and they're fun shows. Ringo will sing a few songs, then he goes back and plays drums, and then he comes and sings a few more. A few diehard Ringo fans complain that he sings the same songs all the time, and, you know, we'd like to hear Good Night or Don't Pass Me By or something once in a while, but he keeps singing the same ones. But, you know, that's part of the shtick. And, yeah, I think you're right, though. He's been very shrewd in keeping his career going. And so even though he's not a talented songwriter with all the other attributes that John and Paul and George had, he's doing pretty well, I'd say, for 2012. He's got another tour. He's coming near me in Florida next week, I think. So, but yeah, that's our third reason to defend Ringo. He's been good at keeping his career going, and he's also been an ambassador for other people and helped keep some other musicians in the limelight and give them a chance to be out there. So,
and then one other thing I'll defend him on is in his Beatles career. He was in two. They made a few movies. Now, two of them, really, one of them was fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
One of them by Roger Ebert is rated a 4-star movie.
Yeah,
and Ringo was sort of the lead in that movie, and that's A Hard Day's Night. He was playing sort of a downtrodden version of himself, but he had great comic timing, and that particularly it stands out, the walking alone on the next to the river and flopping the camera in the river and all that business. A lot of like hilarious sort of stuff in that one. And then you know, and he was also sort of the lead in a less good movie, but both of those things, and in interviews and in stuff like that, it really, his personality, particularly at the time of the Beatles, really was kind of a standout thing, and he was an easy person to sort of take charge of, like, particularly in A Hard Day's Night. George is sort of in the background a little bit, and John's kind of goofy, goes from goofy to surly, and Paul looks really uncomfortable in that movie. Like, it's not like the Paul we know now. Seems like he's very, like, sort of shy and weird,
stiff.
You know?
Yeah.
And stiff. So Ringo really makes that movie kind of go, you know?
And the scene I think of, and that really describes Ringo to me, is, not only the one you mentioned, but the one where they're dancing when they snuck out and went to the club. When the manager said, "Oh, you're supposed to stay in your room," and write letters back to your fans, and they all went down to this party, and Ringo's dancing with some people on the dance floor, and he's jumping up and down with this other guy, just like laughing around and pretending to punch people and just having a fun time. And that's his personality, I think, that came through. And Lennon took himself very seriously. George was kind of aloof sometimes. Paul was always the ham, with other motives in mind. But Ringo just had that natural sense to him that I think people found attractive.
Yeah, and in the end, what you're left with Ringo is like, oh, maybe I'll like. He gets a lot of flack. Seems yeah. like he takes it with good spirit, yeah. and he's still at it in his 70s and still touring away and still having a good time and peace and love.
And so we hope in this episode we've given you some reasons that you can come back with when someone comes up to you and says, "Man, Ringo's an awful drummer. Yeah, boy, he's the luckiest man in the world, huh?
Yeah.
He had no talent." And so here's four, to recap our four ways to defend Ringo. First, innovative and interesting drumming. And we played you a bunch of examples there. Some of the songs that he sang are real hits and some of the most famous Beatles songs that are out there, like Yellow Submarine, With a Little Help from My Friends. And he had some good solo songs, like It Don't Come Easy. And then the number three and four?
His all-star tours helped a lot of people, helped a lot of careers stay alive and made a lot of money. Really shrewd, smart idea to go touring around. And his acting and his personality is the fourth way you can defend him.
Yeah.
Well, let's go out with one last song. I mean, if you're going to do a episode on Ringo, there's only one way to go out.
And
one of the greatest all-time closing songs to a record. So
it is. So with this, we're going to say good night.
Now it's time to say good night. Sleep.